All right, what is going on, everybody? Welcome back to SaberSims DFS Office Hours. It is Wednesday, May 4th of 2022. Thank you for tuning into the stream here today. My name is Jordan. I'm the head coach here at SaberSim. If this is your first time watching this show, this is a live open Q&A style show where I answer questions from the SaberSim community about SaberSim, about DFS strategy, whatever you guys want to talk about on these midweek shows here, Wednesdays and Thursdays. We typically get an opportunity to sweat our MLB early slate lineups a little bit here as well, which is always pretty fun. We've got some good questions in our queue for today already, many of which are a bit of follow-up from what we were talking about yesterday with research builds. We did kind of a deeper dive into the research build process, I guess, yesterday on stream, and had some follow-up questions about that today. So we'll answer some questions about research builds, about the settings to use, a couple other things to do there. So looking forward to that. If you have questions for me for today's show, as always, pop them into YouTube chat or the Office Hours channel in Slack, and I will get to the questions in about chronological order there. If you are watching the recording of this show, there's a link to join Slack in the description of the video here, as well as a timestamp list of every question that we talk about and every topic we talk about on today's show. So definitely recommend getting joined up into Slack. If you join up in Slack, you'll get notifications every time this show goes live. You'll get the opportunity to ask some questions in the Office Hours channel so I can pick them up on the next show. And I think that is about all there is to it. So I'm ready to dive in today. Let's go ahead and jump right in and start answering some questions. And that is not the app. Let's get the app pulled back up here and talk about it here. Interesting kind of early slate going on here. I checked the weather early today, and it looked like things were going to be mostly okay. At least that's what Kevin Roth told me. And then didn't check it again, entered my lineups, and then realized that we have like a rain game in Kansas City that I wasn't aware of. So, and the Cardinals are scoring, and I have a lot of Cardinals. So we'll see how it all works out. Might not end up mattering. I did also have a lot of Elizer Hernandez, the Marlins pitcher, who is now proceeding to get lit up. So might not end up mattering, but interesting little weather sweat going on here in the early slate, at least for me. So I see the viewer count here is jumping up pretty rapidly. So welcome, everybody. Thanks for tuning in here today. Let's go ahead and get into it. So if you missed the first couple minutes here, a lot of questions about some follow-up of the research build conversations we were having yesterday. So talked a lot about research builds yesterday. We'll talk about them a little bit more here today. So I'm going to go ahead and so there's two good questions, I think, for us to start us off with here. And I'm actually going to start with this one. this is a question about correlation in research builds. And the question says, in regards to running a research build specifically for MLB, why do we set the correlation slider to zero? Don't you want some correlation in your builds? Or is it simply is it simply because we're running 1,500 lineups, the correlation happens organically? Thanks. Yeah, so this is a really good question. This is one I've talked about a little bit before, and it's actually something that I think I've gone a little bit back and forth on in our content and in this stream. So you may, if you've watched other videos, you may actually see me say something else here for some of the past videos. But I'll say this. I don't think that you're going to do really necessarily anything wrong if your correlation slider is on and you build 1,500 lineups at 10 sim variants. The main reason why I prefer to turn correlation off, even if I want to research stacks here, is because the research build is basically intended to do a very specific thing, right? So when we look at these settings, when we turn ownership off and we turn correlation off, we turn ownership fade off, we've got sim variants at 10, and we've got building 1,500 lineups, right? This build is accomplishing a very, very specific thing. It is taking the exact outcomes of a single game simulation of every game on the slate, right? So we'll pick one sim from our thousands of sims of every game, and that's the slate. That's essentially the builder saying this is a way, an actual set of outcomes that is the way the slate could play out, right? And when the sliders are set this way, it is building just the optimal lineup, the optimal number of fantasy points you could put into a lineup for that slate sim. And then it moves on to the next one, right? So what you get is when you get to the end of that build and you have 1500 lineups, your exposures that you're looking at for different players are, for a 1500 slate simulation sample size, the exact rate at which those players are showing up in those optimal lineups, right? When you turn the correlation slider on, what starts to happen here is that when it will begin building a lineup for a certain slate simulation, right? So a player will go in, right? Maybe, you know, I don't know, let's pick somebody here. Maybe CJ Krohn goes in first, right? Because he hit two home runs in that particular game, right? Well, the next player that goes into that lineup, instead of it being the next optimal player, the next best player, now it's more likely to use other Rockies in that lineup. And that lineup won't actually be an optimal for that slate simulation anymore. So when you get exposures to different players at the end, you don't necessarily know as specifically if those are the actual percent chances of players being in the optimal lineup, because it's correlation adjusted, right? So that is why I generally prefer to run the builds like this. Now, if you want to research stacks, right? I know that's a very common thing. People say, you know, I don't really care so much, or maybe you do care, maybe you don't, but maybe what you specifically want to do is you want to see how often is a five stack the optimal five stack that could be used. I think this is probably getting pretty close to splitting hairs at this particular point. I don't know. I don't think it has a huge impact on the actual results that you're getting, but I think the better way to do that is to use 0-0-10 and to set a stacking rule and to basically force the builder to build the optimal lineup, but include a five stack. And the reason why is because then again, it's going to use the real fantasy point outcomes from a single slate simulation and not adjust those player projections for correlation, but then build a lineup that so happens to have a five stack in it. I think this is the better way to incorporate correlation into your research builds if you would like to. I don't want to give anybody the wrong impression that if you've been doing research builds where you're running a build like this, that you're doing anything very wrong. I don't think your results are going to be bad. I think the purer way to do this, I guess, is the way I would put it, would be to set the stacking rule just so that those fantasy point projections are unadjusted. And it's really just because, really, at the end of the day, this kind of build, 0-0-10 on SaberSim, with the way that we're using our simulations, it creates a very specific result. You are basically, for 1500 sample, engaging directly with the raw sims, the raw numbers that come out of a single game simulation. And I think that's powerful. So, but good first question to get us started here. Let's just go ahead and keep us going. Some other similar questions on what we were talking about here yesterday. So this one was from Phantom, I believe. And I know I'm kind of walking my way backwards here. So in terms of when the questions came in. So be patient with me. We'll get to everything here. But this was from Phantom. He said, thank you for demoing the Excel method of the research build process yesterday. I think I was on the right track in doing something similar. If one did use this method, would it be advisable to lower the ownership fade since you're kind of baking this in with the exposures? Should other sliders stay the same? This is an interesting question. So Phantom is referencing yesterday's stream. And one of the things we talked about on yesterday's stream was, I'll give kind of a brief summary, but I'd recommend if you haven't seen it to go back and watch that yesterday. But what we did is we ran a research build. And we came up with the exposures from our research build, the percent chance of a player showing up in the optimal lineup. And then I downloaded the player projections here and basically set min and max exposures so that they were plus or minus 10% of the percent chance of that player being in the optimal lineup. So I think it had the effect of setting most of our hitting exposures to 0 to 20%, roughly speaking. Based on whatever the results of that research build were. So what Phantom's saying here is, should I turn down the ownership fade slider as a result of that? And I would say actually that for me, if you were taking that approach, right? So that approach, first of all, is a very balanced approach, right? That approach is ownership agnostic. We're running a research build with ownership fade off, right? And looking at the raw probabilities of players showing up in the optimal lineup, and then setting guardrails on our exposures to be somewhat close to their chance of showing up in the optimal. It's very balanced, right? We're getting very even exposure across our entire lineup portfolio. If you were using those exposures to actually ultimately end up going and building your lineups, I actually think that is a better reason to keep the ownership fade slider relatively higher, because you've set up kind of a safety net already for yourself with those exposures, right? You're not going to necessarily just be, you're not going to have 60% exposure to a low run total team facing against the chalkiest pitcher, right? Because those exposures have already been, a maximum value has already been set for those. So since you're working within this balanced guardrail set of a min and max exposure for every player on the slate, I actually think that's a better reason to allow some ownership fade into your actual final lineup build, because you're protected against, you know, potentially being very well over the field or overly overexposed or even underexposed to a certain team because of ownership, right? You've basically, because of the min and max exposures you've set pre-build, you've basically forced the builder to sending you down a somewhat balanced path. So I think you might as well allow for a little bit of that exploitative ownership fade to be in there when you go and build your lineups, right? That's the way I think about it. So I think regardless, once you've set min and max exposures for every single player on the slate, the extent to which you can be really exploiting ownership is kind of limited anyway. Right. Even if you have, even if you're on some low owned stack because of the max exposures you've set, your maximum exposure to that stack is only going to be 15 or 20% anyway, or maybe 20 or 30% on a smaller slate like we have today. So you might as well, I think, allow that little bit of extra ownership edge to show up in your process there. But I think there's also value there in, you know, the ownership fade slider also kind of helps make sure that on a per lineup basis, ownership is getting taken into account. And if you turn it off or turn it down, what you can have happen potentially is a situation where the first few lineups are very likely to use the highest projected pitchers and the highest projected stacks and build kind of a chalky lineup. And then once the exposures to those players are too high, it will do the opposite. It'll build lineups that have low projected pitchers and low owned stacks, right? Rather than kind of having a nice balanced combination of those different players in your lineups. So I think having a little bit of ownership fade on when you do that can help with that balance. So let me know if that helps, Phantom, to your question there. I think that was kind of maybe a little bit more explaining than showing. Some of these concepts are kind of hard to show quickly in the app. So let me know if that helps answer your question there. And if we want to do kind of more of a demo of what I'm talking about here, I'd be happy to. But I think that's a good start there. So and then we get to an interesting question here from Profit, right? And this one's definitely one I'm going to want to demo here. And he said, is the exposure recommendations from yesterday's show for balanced and diverse lineups for 150 max? When I tried to apply the same process I got by raising smart diversity, the smart diversity slider, sim variant slider, I got 70% exposure to the lowest implied run total teams. And when I changed exposure, another low implied run total team popped up. Could you recommend an effective process to balance exposure for 20 max? Yeah, for 20 maxes, it can be a little bit trickier because you just have you're looking at less lineups, right? The 20 max build is essentially like, you can think about it as the first 20 lineups of a 150 max build, right? There are always going to be, even in a build that has a very high variance setting, there's always still going to be the best plays on the slate, and they are likely to be somewhat condensed around the highest saber scoring lineups. I'll show you what I mean. This is very easy to just kind of demo here. So what we had talked about yesterday was running a build here with a very high sim variant setting as a very, very basic and quick way to diversify your portfolio, right? So the theme of at least the beginning part of the stream yesterday was, how can I play with a much more diversified set of exposures to different players? And we talked about a number of strategies to do that, but the most basic way and the easiest way to do that quickly, I said, was to increase your sim variant slider. So let's build this here and see what we get for tonight's slate. We'll talk about this a little bit more. And then I want to show and kind of compare the difference between 20 max and 150 max and talk a little bit about this. So we'll give this just a second to build. I think it's important that we have a nice big lineup pool to work with here for this question. So cool. Give this just a second here. While we have a minute, since I got, well, maybe not. Maybe I haven't gotten screwed yet, but since weather kind of snuck up on me on this early slate here, one thing to look out for, I would watch that Coors Field game tonight if you're playing the main slate. I think Kevin Roth said it looks pretty safe. It's a pretty wet day here in the Denver area. So Coors Field's pretty resilient to weather concerns. They play more often than they don't, especially just because we have, especially early in the season, a lot of weather games anyway. But I would keep an eye on that game. I don't know if the Coors game tonight is as safe as Mr. Kevin Roth says it is, at least right now. So we'll see. But I could be wrong. I probably will be wrong. But anyway, so let's look at this. So in 150 lineups, right, this kind of has the effect that you would expect immediately, right? 33% exposure to our highest owned hitter. Right. This is basically the same impact we got yesterday. It was an 11-game slate yesterday, so we had even lower exposure to our highest owned hitter. But here, 7-game slate, 30%, right? But if we just change this to 20%, right, this is immediately going to increase the exposure you're getting to these players, right? Because ultimately, you know, for one reason or another, the White Sox are one of the better projected teams one of the better teams on the slate to use, according to SaberSim, for this set of settings, for this slate, where everything stands right now, right? So when you condense and look at the top 20 SaberScore lineups of your 150 pool, the exposure to those players is naturally going to condense, right? This is something that you will even probably see this happen even more if we go down to three lineups, right? Now we have 100% exposure to three hitters, right? So as your lineup pool condenses, this is generally a theme that you can expect to see, that your exposures to your highest exposed players will naturally condense and be more and more exposed, right? So you'll get less exposure to your highest exposed players the wider your pool is, basically all of the time. So with that said, like, I am typically just okay with this, right? Because you have less lineups to play with anyway, right? 55% exposure to, Luis Robert is not the exact same thing in 20 lineups as it is in 150, right? Even if I wanted to play a very diversified portfolio, I would think diversified for a 20 max probably means, you know, being okay with, on this particular slate, like 50, 55, 60% exposure to my highest owned hitter in a 20 max and 35% or 30% exposure in 150 max. So I don't think this is necessarily like exposures aren't necessarily like, they can't be thought of in a vacuum. And actually, I think this is kind of a flaw in general with a lot of DFS content out there. You know, if you watch a lot of live before lock streams or different slate previews, people will say, you know, I have 40% exposure to this guy, I have 60% exposure to this guy. That I think it's pretty safe to always assume that when somebody's saying that, they are probably referring to a 150 max lineup set and not a 20 max lineup set. And you kind of have to adjust that and take that with a grain of salt if you are playing less lineups. Right. I mean, the less lineups you are playing with, right, the more intuitive this gets. Right. If you were playing a three max, right, somebody saying they have 25% exposure to a player means basically nothing to you. Right. And that kind of continues as you get to 20, exposures become a little bit more granular. They make a little bit more sense in that way. So with that said, for me personally, as somebody that wants to have a very diversified pool in my 150s, I am a little bit more comfortable on like a slate like this of having this kind of exposure to my highest owned bats on a 20 max build, right? But the reason why we build so many lineups in step three is so you can make these adjustments for yourself. I see also no problem saying 50% exposure to a hitter in a 20 max lineup is too much risk for me, and my maximum exposure I'm comfortable with is 30%, right? That's perfectly fine. You'll find, especially if you are building with a very high sim variance setting, that your lineups are pretty receptive to those kinds of adjustments. They're pretty flexible, right? You can probably get your exposures about wherever you want. One thing I wanted to note here, since it was also a part of this question here, is that Profit specifically said lowest implied run total teams. And then when I changed exposure, another low implied run total team popped up. If you are getting very high exposure to very low run total teams, it is probably actually the ownership fade slider that's kind of coming into play. Especially on, you know, these bigger contests, if you're playing like some of the bigger GPPs out there, especially even on smaller slates, you are likely to see the highest SaberScore lineups generally probably push you in that direction of fading a lot of the chalk, playing some lower owned bats. If that is too much ownership fade for you, a couple things. I think, you know, knocking the ownership fade slider down a couple notches and rebuilding and seeing what those lineups look is perfectly fine. Or you can just adjust your exposure here, right? Leave the ownership fade slider where it is, but adjust your exposure down to some of those teams, right? Either in the form of the team stacks or the individual batter stacks, right? Maybe leveraging against the chalkiest pitcher on the slate by playing a really low-owned, low-run total team is a good idea, but maybe you can get away with doing that in only 30% of your lineups instead of 70, like it sounds like it was happening here to Profit. So in summary, right, I think this is a normal thing. You should expect that your exposure to your highest-owned players from an absolute value standpoint is going to be higher the fewer number of lineups you're playing. If you are 30% exposed to your highest bats in 150, you're probably going to be 50% owned, exposed to them in 20, right? That, I think that's a general trend. That's something that you kind of expect. No problem if you want to adjust your exposures in step three to dial those in to match your risk tolerance a little more. And if you're finding that you're particularly very highly exposed to very contrarian stacks, then either adjust your exposure down or turn the ownership fade slider down. Nothing wrong with doing either of those. So. But hopefully that helped there. Okay. And then let's hit this question. This is from Tone here. And this one is a bit of a, different topic. So we'll hit this one real quick. This also, relates to something we were talking about yesterday here. He said, question about what you were saying regards to multipliers, specifically the 40x cheapies. I recognize what you were saying about them being closer to GPPs, but I use the satellite settings. I do this because when I compare the percentile you need to cash in a 40x, it's similar or close to what you need in some of the satellites. Does that make sense? Or do you think GP settings are best? I think for a 40x, a satellite's perfectly fine. So there are these contests out there. I think they're called 40x boosters. And pretty straightforward, right? It's like the top, I think it's like the top 2%, top 2.5% or something like that, 40Xs, and it's flat from there. They're small enough that they do kind of play similar to a satellite. So I think that's fine. I'm curious, you know, they're probably, I feel like there's something like this, somewhere around these kinds of settings. The satellite settings are just going to push you in a more variant, diversified and contrarian direction for these contests. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I think either of those slider settings will work. I think you're probably right that the 40X boosters probably bear a little bit more resemblance to a satellite. I don't know if they're all the way there because while you need to have a very high finishing percentile, you aren't rewarded specifically overwhelmingly for first. You are still, it's still a flat payout structure within that top 2%. So kind of in between. I think either settings would be fine. I think somewhere in between those two settings would also be fine. So, but good question. Okay, and then a question from Soren here that it looks like Will beat me to about MMA specifically. And he said, speaking of a research build with a big MMA card coming up this weekend, are there any recommendations to do MMA research builds? Correlation doesn't matter in that sport anyways. Yes, I think I agree with Will. I think MMA is probably one of my favorite sports to do research builds in. I think it can, there's a few things that are very nice about MMA in particular for research builds. The first is that you basically, maybe on a 15 fight card, maybe this isn't the case, but we don't have projections yet up here, but let's go back to like last week. You probably are going to need the optimal or close to the optimal to win the contest, right? Like I think last week was one of those rare weeks where the lineup that took down a lot of the big GPPs wasn't actually the optimal, but it's generally a pretty good assumption that the optimal lineup is going to be the winning lineup in most larger field contests, right? And it's important to remember that that is actually the core assumption we are making anytime we do a research build. Right. And that's actually that's one of the big flaws behind doing it in a sport like even baseball. Right. You don't actually need the optimal to win most baseball contests almost ever for general main slates. And when we run a research build, we are assuming that we do. And that's an assumption that we have to understand has some error associated with it. For MMA, that's not really the case, right? When you run a research build here and you get the percent chance of a player showing up in the optimal lineup, that is very well, that very well approximates the percent chance of that player showing up in the winning lineup for a contest. Second, right, the other thing is that because there are fewer combinations of lineups that you can make in MMA, right, the 1,500 lineups you get out of your research build represent a bigger proportion of that set of lineups that you can make on the slate. Right? That's another core assumption that we are making when we run a research build that has a variety of error associated with it. Right? We are saying that this 1,500 slate simulation sample we have to work with roughly is representative of the whole of all lineups you can make. Right? Now, on slates where there are a lot of different lineups you can make, like an NBA, NFL, MLB main slate, that assumption has some issues, right? That may not be very representative of the entire set of lineups that you can make. On MMA, when there are a lot less combinations of lineups, it is much more representative of that number. So then finally, not having to worry about correlation and not having to think about how correlation really plays into it is another nice benefit, right? We don't even, you know, there's... I guess that kind of speaks for itself, right? We don't even have to worry about the correlation component. So all of this to say, I think... if you were to objectively kind of rate the sports that are the best to do to conduct research builds on, I think MMA is up there. I think it's one of my favorites. Golf is another one I really like running research builds on. NFL Showdown and Showdown in general, I think, is a really good one. I run research builds for most sports anyway as just a part of my lineup building process, but I do think... It is really a good idea for MMA. The one other thing I will note here, and one thing to be careful of, is that at the moment, our MMA ownership projections are essentially derived from research builds, right? They mostly use our own projections as a primary input, and we basically do a research build process to generate them. So if you are looking to leverage against ownership by running a research build, you are probably going to find that there are not many opportunities to do that in the research build process. If you want to take this approach, I would spend some time maybe even comparing to some other ownership projections that are out there, or just doing your own research on the slate to dial in the ownership projections, and I think you'll get a better result. When Will was on talking MMA with me here a couple weeks ago, you know, one very simple thing that he mentioned that happens a lot is that female fighters are often lower owned than their optimal rates than our ownership projections would expect. The main event is generally going to be higher owned than we would expect. Those are two very simple things that you can do to get a little bit of leverage on. But I think just doing a little bit of research into, you know, what else is out there to dial in the ownership projections can be a pretty good tool as well. And we're working on ways to continue to improve our own ownership model for some of these more niche sports like MMA. But that is one thing to be aware of. If you're going to run research builds to leverage against ownership, right, specifically, I would study the ownership projections and try to add a little bit of value there. That's not the only way to use a research build. And I should be clear about that, right? I use research builds often for an exploitative edge, but you can also use research builds as a tool to manage your risk, right? You could run a research build similar to what we were talking about yesterday, right? That was that by setting your min and max exposures to something close to the optimal rate for different players, that is using a research build to balance a portfolio. That is not using a research build to get an ownership edge. So that there's more than one way to use these kinds of builds in your process, right? So I'm going to let this build real quick. This is for last week's card, right? But you could use this. Let's say, actually, let me give you an example here, because I think this is actually a pretty interesting case study, right? So let me give this a moment to run. And I'll catch my breath here for a second too. But I don't think I've actually ever really talked about this before, not explicitly. So I think this is kind of a cool little tool here or cool little application of research builds to talk about a little bit here. So, okay. So let's say I'm going to skip this for just a second. Let's say you were running your lineups, right? And you're playing the Haymaker, the 20 max $3, right? So you're using default settings and you're just running your first build and you want to see kind of how things are looking, right? And so I know, we're doing a lot of watching builds run today, but that's okay. That's because I think this is a good point to make. So we'll let this build here. And see what we get here. Okay, and we're looking at this here, and we're looking at our highest leverage plays, and we see that we're okay. So we're very highly exposed to Gina Mazzini. I assume that's how it's how her name's pronounced. Who lost? Rough day for the SaberSim MMA crew for sure last week. But and you're looking at this, and you're like, okay, I'm 100% exposed to this fighter, right? Like, what's my level of comfort with that? Well, we can come over here and use the research build to basically ask ourselves, how often is this fighter in the optimal lineup, right? She's in the optimal lineup 45% of the time. Now, for 20 lineups, maybe you're okay just taking advantage of that stand and saying, I want 100% exposure, right? But this is a good number to know as something to influence that decision, right? Like, how much risk are you willing to take on in a set of 20 lineups to a fighter who projects very well, who clearly performs pretty well in the sims, but only has a 40% chance to show up in that optimal, right? You could do the same thing with Romanov, right? Maybe even Romanov is a better example, right? A fighter who we projected at 55%, I think came in at like 70%, right? That's that main fighter. That's that main event bias. That's also, actually, I don't know, maybe Romanov, I don't think Romanov was the main event. Now that I think about it, but that's maybe a little bit of the heavyweight bias. Anyway, right. You might ask yourself, how do I want to deal with this situation? Best projected fighter on the slate, right? Well, he's only optimal 44% of the time, right? That can influence your decision of how much risk you're willing to take on for this fighter when it comes to actually building your lineups, right? Maybe in 20, you're comfortable with 100%, but maybe you're not. And knowing that number, I think, can be useful in making that decision for yourself. So, you can use those research builds as an exploitative ownership leverage kind of thing, but I think you can also use it just as like, what is that player's percent chance of actually showing up in that optimal lineup? And how does that change the way I want to be exposed to that player or fighter or whatever in my lineups? So anyway, good question. That was a good one. Cool. Okay. Let's jump back here. I see some questions coming in YouTube chat. So we'll hop over here. Nancy Jirguy said, what would going under 500 pool size do if I'm playing a 150 max contest with 1,000 to 10,000 people? Wouldn't you put your pool size to be 150? Don't you think that the 500 pool size would be overkill? Let's see. Yeah, so Guy Will Gamble makes a good point. He says, bigger lineup pool does a number of things for you, but it gives you a bigger pool for you to make ownership adjustments in step three. Yeah, so the lineup pool does, that's well said. It does a few different things. The first most important thing, I think, that having the lineup pool gives you is the ability to adjust these exposures in step three, exactly as Guy Will Gamble said here, right? Which can be really useful. You know, if you run your build and you're not really happy with how things are looking, or you want to be more on or under a team or diversify or whatever you want to do, having a larger pool size there will let you do that without having to go back to step one. That's actually, I think, one of the most frustrating things about most traditional optimizers is that you have to do this back and forth process of like setting things up in the pre-build process, tweaking your exposures and projections there, and then building them and then hoping it worked out. And if it doesn't, go back to the beginning and start over, right? So that's the biggest value, right? Maybe we say, you know, I don't want this many White Sox stacks, right? We can make that adjustment right here. But the second value, and I think this is, I think this is like still important, and I think it's a little more subtle, is that because we have the ability to grade these lineups in a more sophisticated way than just optimizing for average projection, right? In the form of SaberSort, there's a value to building more lineups than the ones you need so that you can grade them and sort them by the SaberScore, right? So like on the calculation side of this, it's generally easy to optimize for just raw projection, right? You typically don't need to build. I mean, I don't want to get into the weeds of the actual like solvers that are doing this here, but you typically don't need to build an enormous number of lineups to optimize for one variable, right? So if you were just optimizing for highest average projection and you need the 20 best lineups, you probably don't need to build 500 to determine what those 20 are, right? At least you don't need to have those 500 in your pool. SaberScore is looking at a lot of different things. It is looking at the average projections, but it's also looking at what did those players score in that particular sim. It's looking at the ownership of those players, and it's looking at how well that lineup correlates together, right? That is a harder thing to do in one go. It is much harder to build just 20 lineups and know that you're ending up with the best 20 saber score lineups that you could have all in one fell swoop. The more lineups we build in the pool, the better we are going to be able to determine what the best 20 or 150 are. Now, there's a point of diminishing returns there, right? We probably don't need to build 10,000 lineups, right? But there is a definitely a material difference between just building 150 and just taking the first 150 you get versus building 1,500, sorting and ranking them all by saber score, and then playing the best 150 from there. So the point I'm trying to make here is, even if you know before the build that no matter what, you're not going to edit any exposures for whatever reason, I would still recommend building with a big pool size, because it saber score is a complicated calculation. And the more lineups you build, the better, the more chances you give the builder at identifying or finding what those best lineups are to play. On baseball in particular, I mean, if you're playing 20 lineups, 500 is probably going to be plenty. I think it's going to be more than enough. But I am typically playing closer to that 150 range for most of my baseball slates here, and I always build 1,500, right? What that does is that means every lineup that you ultimately end up taking with you into your contest, you basically had, the builder had 10 shots at making that lineup, and it found what the best one was, I think is a good way to think about it, right? 150 divided by 1,500 is 10%, right? So you have, 150 times 10 is 1,500. So you have 10 shots to make each lineup, right? That has a big value. So I don't think, taking kind of reversing this on its head, if you're playing cash, which again, I have my own thoughts on cash games, but let's say you're playing cash, I don't think you need to build 1,500 lineups to figure out what the best cash game lineup is, because it's typically pretty easy to optimize for the single variable of the projected score. It's likely that even if you built five lineups, those are probably just going to be the top five highest scoring projected score lineups you could have built. But that's not the case with saber score, because it's a complicated calculation. So let me know if that makes sense. Good question there. And I actually realized I was hovering this. This is actually the question we were talking about here. So let me know if that makes sense, if there's any confusion there. Again, the practical side of this is still, it's very useful to be able to edit exposures here in step three. But there is definitely a theoretical component of this that I think adds value to doing this, even if you're not going to edit exposures. So good stuff. Good question. HC said, I've been doing the 20 out of 500 for my lineup single entry, then checking out the 20 on the standard plan. Yeah, I think that's a great approach. I like that, Edie. Even if you're playing a single entry lineup, I've talked about this before. If you're playing just a single bullet, I always like looking at like the first 20 or so and seeing kind of what's out there, what the options are, right? So what are the best 20 lineups I could play in this contest? Gives you a lot of options or a lot of different ways, or maybe it puts you on a stack or a pitcher you weren't thinking of. So I think that can be a really good approach. I don't have the patience for waiting for my single bullet to pay off in baseball in particular, but okay, cool. I don't see any other questions coming in here today. Let me make sure I didn't miss anything else. While I'm scanning here, if you guys have a question for me, feel free to fire away at me. But I don't see any other questions coming in at the moment. So, are they still playing baseball in Kansas City? Curious. Still kind of holding on to hope that game plays through, because I think my hopes on the early slate rest with the Cardinals. But let's see. I don't see any other questions coming in here. I'll give it just a minute. I always feel like I can sense that somebody out there is furiously typing, trying to get their question in at the last second when we are wrapping up some of these streams a little bit early here. But that may just about do it here. Before we go, I will mention that if you are watching this stream, the recording or the live version, wherever, and you haven't yet signed up for SaberSim, as always, check us out, sabersim.com, free 7-day trial, no strings attached, right? If you hate it, perfectly fine, cancel, we won't charge your card, but hopefully you enjoy it, hopefully you like it and watch these office hours and learn a little bit more about how it works. But free 7-day trial on the site. Jeff had asked, did you say you guys are working on tiers? It is on our roadmap to add tier support. Our goal is basically to have all sports and all contest types apart from like Madden Sims, I think is like the one exception that we're probably not going to support, up and available and fully supported. With that, we have to kind of prioritize. So tiers is not something that I believe we are actively working on here at the moment, but it is something we do want to have support for in the future. So yeah, I know maybe not the ideal answer, but it's on our roadmap. It's not something that's in active development at the moment. So, and Nancy Drew guy said, thanks. I guess I was doing it wrong. I think it's much better to build with a pool size. I don't think you're not going to get bad lineups regardless, because the lineups that you would have been playing would have been in your pool anyway. So it's not as if you're just like sunk, but I do think it adds a ton of value to build with a bigger pool. So HC said they're still playing. That's good to hear. That's awesome. Go sweat that game. So, okay. I don't see any other questions coming in. So I'll leave you guys to it to go. And oh, Brad just got here. Brad, we're just wrapping up, man. Sorry. But it's good to, I'm glad you made it. But if you want to rewind, you can watch the stream that was here. But anyway, we'll go ahead and wrap it up there. I will be right back again tomorrow, same time, same place, 2 p.m. Eastern. So if you have questions as you're building your lineups for the main slate tonight, NBA, whatever else you're doing, feel free to fire away in the Office Hours channel on Slack. We'll get those questions tomorrow. Good luck in the rest of the MLB early slate, whatever other DFS contests you're playing out there. And I will see you guys tomorrow. Take care.